So welcome this morning to a lecture on interval analysis. So the interesting thing here is that, and the kind of relief, we had this constant propagation and we made a big fuss on how to prove that it is correct. And we condensed the proving effort to just proving that the operators of constant propagation preserve a description relation. And you might have thought, constant propagation is so obvious, why do I have to invest so much effort for proving correctness? And now it pays off, because now we can use the same approach of proving an analysis correct, and by replacing the constants, this is the integers together with top, with intervals. And then the same argument allows us to prove that the information which we compute is correct, because the description relation is preserved. And in order to apply this line of constructing an analysis, we invested some effort to see how to construct these abstract operations. And so for plus and times, it was, well, more or less straightforward. And for these comparison operators, it was a little bit more tricky. And the guiding idea always is, assume that the arguments of the operator are abstract values describing some concrete values, and we do the operation in the concrete. Is that still described by the operation in the result of the operation in the abstract? So this means here, for example, for that comparison operator, for this comparison operator applied to these two abstract values, to these intervals, the resulting interval should describe all outcomes which are possible when I compare one of the described arguments, a pair of described arguments. So this means if I take an element, say, x1 here and an element x2 there, and I compare compare them for less, then, and it has a result, then this should be kind of described. This concrete value should be described by the interval which we return. Yeah? And that means we are only allowed to return the interval 1, 1 if for every x1 in the first interval and every x2 in the second interval, the x1 is less than the x2. And then we found out when that is the case, namely when they are disjoint and one is below the other. And so then, in that sense, here we kind of construct the meaning of this abstract operator in such a way that it preserves the description relation. Okay? We proceed in the same line as for constant propagation. We have this set of abstract values. This is the set of intervals here. Then we take all the variable assignments from variables to such abstract values. We add the element bottom, since the value domain is just a partial order. And so by that we now obtain a complete lattice. And then and then in the same way as before, a concrete variable assignment is described by an abstract one if that holds for every variable. And that means that for every variable, the concrete value is contained in the interval. So it's very natural, and then we kind of can raise that as for constant propagation to obtain an abstract evaluation of expressions. So that returns then an interval for an expression. And this interval should contain all the values which the expression might return. So here, in some sense, this is a copy of the slide for constant propagation that gives us a abstract the script gives us a way to say how a control flow edge, the action at the control flow edge, operates on the local state. And so perhaps just to remind you, we may look at this one, the assignment. We evaluate the right hand side. This gives us an interval. This is the new value for the x. So that's what we do with the assignment. And most interesting is what happens at the guards. So at the guard, we do the following. If we are sure, so if it's a positive guard, if we are sure that the expression always evaluates to false, that is, the only possibility is that there is zero, and that means that the expression which we, when evaluated, returns the value zero, the interval 0, 0. In this case, I know this edge is definitely not taken, and then I can return bottom. Otherwise, I have to return the branch may be taken, and therefore the D must be returned. And in the negative, for a negative expression, one has to see to again. One again would proceed as follows: we evaluate the expression of the condition, and then we, if the value zero is possible, then we have to return D. And is possible is that the interval returned for E contains the element zero. You could express that as that the interval 0, 0 is less or equal than the interval returned by the expression. In that case, zero is possible, and then I have to return D. And if the interval for E is somehow disjoint with zero, for example, it is the interval 5 to 20. Then we know zero is definitely not contained in that interval, and then we can return bottom, because then we know that branch will not be taken. Okay. So that's in that sense. Now, okay. So now we have an interval analysis. What is now? Are we done? But there was a problem with intervals. What was the problem with intervals? That you have infinite ascending chains. So now we have kind of something. I come in a minute to that. Let us first. Why does it kind of move around? Interesting. There is one more thing which we can do. We may recall that. For constant propagation, we had one special treatment of expressions of conditions of that form, because then we could use the value of E to improve the value of X. Because if then the branch is taken, then we know that X must have a value which is compatible with that of E. So then I could improve. That gives me, at least during the I gain information for the X. That you can do also for intervals. So here is what one could do. So and again, we have to think a little bit carefully. So. Bottom, so if we have neck E, that means E should be I guess I should start with a positive case, which is this one. So positive E. So if the interval is precisely given by 0, 0, then the control flow edge is not taken, and then we return bottom, and we cannot obtain a better result there. Now, in all other cases, the edge may be taken, the guard may succeed, and so we may proceed across this control flow edge. But in that case, at least in some situations, we may improve on the variable assignment. And we may improve in some particular cases. So, for example, when we have an equality test. What can we know then? Well, then we can kind of evaluate the E1. This gives us an interval here. And now the D also provides a value for the X. And then we know that the X must have a value, okay, in D of X. But since it is, if I take the guard, it must be equal to the value returned by E1. So therefore, it also must be a value contained in this interval for E1. So this is obtained by doing the intersection. Yeah. So therefore, in this case, we can improve the value of X by doing the intersection. And now what happens if the guard is X is less or equal to E1? In this case, X is less or equal to E1. So E1 again is an interval. Now that is, the value of X is less or equal to some value in the interval for E1. So now think of the interval, it looks like 0 to 5. So X is less or equal to some value in this range. So then we know for sure at least that it is less than or equal than 5. We cannot be sure that it is less or equal to 0, but we are sure that it will be less or equal to 5. And that means we kind of intersect the value for X with the interval which has the upper bound of the E1 and the lower bound, well, we don't know. Yeah? So we have so that is the best thing what we can do. And if EX is greater or equal, if the guard is X is greater or equal to E1, in that case, so again, think of X greater or equal than this interval, then we do not know for sure whether it is greater than 5. It could also be only greater than 4, or greater than 3, or greater or equal to 2. So in that sense, we have to take the lower bound. So that is, we only know then that X is at least as big as 0. That is, we take the lower bound here and intersect the old value of X with the interval lower bound infinity. Okay? So here, in this sense, conditions allow us to improve values significantly. Values of variables significantly. There's an interesting case. So you can, one can have more situations where one could improve values of X. For example, in the situation when you have a test X equal to Y. When the test is that, what kind of improvement can you do then? Well, then you can, the D1 of X should be D of X, D of Y, but the value of Y also can be improved to D of X, D of Y. If you have two variables, then you can improve the value of both for both. And the same holds true for any comparisons of variables. In these cases, you can improve not only one variable, but the value of two variables even. That might be useful in some cases. Oop. No. Okay. So that was the positive guard and the negative guard. Well, there you can do similar things. For this equality, you cannot do very much, but if you have a negated disequality, then this is the same as equality, and there accordingly one would do the same improvement as for equality of X and E1 on the last slide. And since we have here the negation, and if the guard then is like that, then this behaves like X is less or equal to E1, and we do the improvement of the value of X accordingly, and the same for this guard. So this is a kind of matter of routine, so therefore I guess we can, there's no extra insight here. Okay? So now let's see for for our favorite, well, not, it's not a favorite, yeah, it's the, it's our favorite example, it's the example of the introduction, where we have a for loop going from 0 to 41, and inside an array bound check, and the array has also is from, goes from 0 to has indices from 0 to 41, and we check for that. So that is, so the control flow graph for that would look like follows. We have the we have the loop index, the iteration index being here. This is the upper, the guard of the for loop. This is the guard of the array bound check. Here is the address calculation and access to the array and the Here is the address calculation and the access to the array, and here is the increment of the iteration variable. And that here is the exit, the error exit, which we would like to prove unreachable, and 8 is the ordinary exit of the loop. Yeah? And now the question is, what will interval analysis do with this example program? If we can't do that program, then we are doomed, because that's the most simple program, and if we do not even can that do that, then we should commit suicide. Okay, so therefore, now let's see what we will do. So at least we can find a solution to the constraint system. So as I said, the round-robin iteration is a little bit of a problem because we have infinite ascending chains. But what happens, what would the solution be? So here we find for program point zero, we see that there everything is possible. So therefore, minus infinity plus infinity for L and U, the lower and upper bound of the index I. For program point one, we find, okay, that zero is a value coming from here. And then from inside the loop, I is iterated until 42. So therefore, we will obtain here, or we would like to have the best result which we could hope for. The best result which we could hope for is the interval 0,42 for program point 1. For program point, if with that interval, if we go to proceed to program point 2, then we may ask, is it the case that we enter if I is less than 42? So that is at program point 2, we have the interval 0,41. Now there, we test whether it is whether I is in the interval 0,41. If yes, we proceed to program point 3. To program point 7, we never proceed, therefore this is bottom, because it checks the condition, which is definitely false. Yeah, so therefore we, in all cases, so that is already the very good news. This will be unreachable. And now at program point 3 and 4, I is not changed, so therefore in both cases, we still have always zero, and even until program point 5, the value of I is always 0,41. And then from 5 to 6, the value is increased, so we get 1,42 as the interval for I. And joining this interval at program point 6 with the value 0 arriving from program point 0, we recover the value at program point 1, which is the interval 0,42. And then at program point, now going to proceeding to program point 8, there we have to intersect the value at 1, which is this interval. We have to intersect it with the negation of I is less than 42. So I is must be greater or equal to 42. So we have to intersect. We have to intersect 0,42 with the interval 42 infinity, and that gives us the interval 42, 42. So therefore, at program point 8, we obtain the information 42, 42. Yeah, on that, now, in some sense, what did I do? I guessed some intervals for every program point, or I took a plausible one, and somehow I have verified that all constraints are satisfied. So I have shown you that this is a solution, and in fact, this is the least solution. And now I've asked you, is there, if I do this interval analysis, no matter how, whether I'm able, I will be able to compute it, is there always a least solution? Or could it be that the constraint system has no solution? Or that there is no least solution? Well, we have a complete lattice, we have a constraint system, we have shown with our super-duper Gnaster Tarski fixed point theorem, this kind of constraint system always will have a least solution. That is also for intervals, there will be a best interval for every variable at every program point. And it's only a question whether we can find it. Yeah? Round-robin iteration may not arrive there. So here in this particular case, will round-robin iteration provide us with this variable assignment? Because round-robin iteration may even terminate, also there are in principle infinite ascending chains. Because it might be that there are infinite ascending chains, but they may not occur. So here in particular, they would not occur. What would happen? So in the first iteration, we would find at program point, I write perhaps down the first iteration, we would have 0, 0 here, and so on, 0, 0 here, yes. Then we would proceed to program point 5, where we increase, we get 1, comma, no, here. At program point, from going from 5 to 6, we will have 1, 1. Then in the next iteration, at program point 1, we will do the least upper bound of these two intervals, which gives us then the interval 0, 1 here, which means that in the next round, we will have 1, 2 here, and so on. And then the next one, we will do the least upper bound of 0, 1 and 1, 2, which gives 0, 2, and so on. So the interval will become larger and larger and larger until in the end it will be 1, 42, and then it will not grow anymore. Yeah? So it will terminate. Fixed point iteration will terminate, but the fixed point iteration somehow executes the whole program. And that's perhaps not desirable because sometimes the upper bound is not known and then it will iterate forever. Yeah, so here in this case, we are lucky. Fixed point iteration will terminate. Round robin iteration will terminate. It only will take an awful long time. Yeah. So we notice the solution. There is always a smallest solution. Round-robin iteration will find it in this particular example, but in stupid other examples it may fail, simply because it's not able to detect this upper bound statically. So now we have to invest some kind of smartness. So we have now to think what could we do. And so here you see already a first idea. That idea goes back to old Patrick Cousseau in the 77. So in his PhD thesis, that was actually, in some sense, one thing was the formalization of properties by means of complete lattices, and the other thing is, now how can I compute fixed points? And then he came up, okay, if fixed point iteration will not terminate, apply widening. So what is widening? So widening is, if you like, an acceleration technique. So you iterate, and now you are not willing to iterate 1,000 times you only want to iterate 3 times. How can you do it? Well, iteration results in an increasing sequence of values. So widening, therefore, is a method to increase more rapidly. Yeah? Clearly, when you go, instead of increasing an interval, enlarging an interval by 1, enlarging an interval for, say, by a factor of 2, means that the interval grows larger, and therefore the information you have at hand is less precise. So that is kind of more or less implicit in the method, or implied by the method, that yes, we accelerate the iteration. Iteration will terminate more rapidly, but also we lose information more rapidly. And that means in the end, it might be that you terminate very nicely, but the result is completely useless because it's all top. Yeah. Okay, so but that's precision. So for the moment, we are happy if we have something which terminates. So therefore, we are willing to give up precision. And so the method which Patrick suggested is the following. We bound the number of modifications of values. So in the example, you have an interval like this one. So how can you modify it to get a larger value? You can modify it in that by successively decreasing the lower bound and successively increasing the upper bound. And the idea is, it's a very crude one, as soon as we notice that the upper bound is increased, we do not increase by 1 or by 2, we immediately increase to infinity. And if the lower bound is decreased, we do not decrease by 1 or 2 or something, but immediately decrease to minus infinity. That is, if there is an increase, we throw away 1 bound. And so that since there are only 2 bounds, so we can only increase twice. Interesting. So we can increase only twice, and that's fine, so the fixed point iteration will terminate. Okay, so that's the idea. And how do we formalize it? So here is how we formalize it, this kind of approach. We kind of assume we have such... this is our constraint system, if you like, which we want to solve. And then what we do is this kind of green inequality we could also rewrite into an equality. Namely by saying that, so here we state that xi should be at least as big as the right-hand side. Here we say xi should be the same as xi least upper bound with the right-hand side. And that is kind of, that these two things are the same, follows, I think we used that somewhere, that x is less or equal to y if and only if y equals y, sorry. The order I put, sorry, I remove everything again and write it again. So x is greater or equal to y. This is the same as x equals x least upper bound y. I guess this we used when we proved that distributivity implies monotonicity. We use this kind of rule. So, and that is kind of, so therefore, accordingly, this here is the same as this. Yeah. So now I have rewritten a constraint, an inequality into an equality. And then you see here, you take the old value and have to do the least upper bound with a new value to obtain the new value. And that, by that you kind of enforce that the iteration will always result in larger values in each iteration, in each round of the round robin iteration, even if the right hand sides are not monotonic. Yeah? Even so, the right hand side might return any value, larger, smaller, incomparable to x. If you take the least upper bound with x, you definitely will either get the old value or something which is larger. Okay, so in that sense, this kind of doing this least upper bound trick, you can even do a fixed point iteration, or you can obtain a solution even if right hand sides are not monotonic. And for not monotonic functions, so far we made no very strong assertions. Okay, so that is a side effect. By that we kind of enforce, if you have this accumulation style of equality, that whenever we evaluate the right-hand side, we will get an increasing and ascending chain. And if that ascending chain results in something which is stable, then we have obtained a solution. So that was, So that is kind of only rewriting of our constraint. Patrick's suggestion? Patrick's suggestion then is to replace this least upper bound operator here in this equation by this new fancy operator. And this operator is called a widening. And so this widening is something, so this is an operator which takes the old value and the new contribution and constructs the next value for the x. And so you could take the least upper bound. This is the minimal amount which you could provide. But if you want to accelerate, you might also choose a larger value. Yeah. So that this widening, therefore, should have the satisfy the requirement that it is at least as big as each of its arguments. And then if you simply plug that into this accumulating equation, and then do fixed point iteration. And then it will compute a sequence of values for the axis, but they will increase perhaps more rapidly than if I use just least upper bound in these particular spots. So what does it mean? So for interval analysis, we said this widening we could do in the following way. So the first thing is if one of the arguments is bottom, okay, then we take the other argument. And for non-bottom values, if we have to take to combine d1 and d2, these are now variable assignments, we do that for each variable separately. And for each variable, we do now it boils down, I have two intervals. One interval is the value for a variable, the old interval for a variable, and the other interval is the new interval for the variable. And so it should kind of be larger than the least upper bound. Yeah? So we take the result, therefore, should be an interval. And now what would I do? So I said the lower bound either stays the same or goes to infinity, to minus infinity. So it stays the same if the least upper bound would not change it. So that is, if this L2 here, the new value L2 is kind of to the left of L1. That means that the lower bound in the union would not change, and then we keep it. Otherwise, so if the least upper bound would these two intervals would change that value, the L1, as so that is the if the lower bound kind of moves downward, then we immediately go to minus infinity. And the same for the upper bound. If the old upper bound is still good enough for the union of both, that means if U1 is at least as big as U2, then we keep the U1, otherwise we go to plus infinity and throw it away. So here are two examples. I guess with examples you see it immediately what goes on here. So here if you take that one. So the left interval is the old interval and the right interval is the new one. So, and that you see, so the lower bound, zero is still a good lower bound. Yeah? And two is still a good upper bound, so therefore both bounds are preserved. Now, if you take consider the same two intervals, but in the opposite ordering. So the old interval is 1,2, and the new interval now is 0,2. So that means that the lower bound is no longer good enough, because zero, so the lower bound kind of moves to the downward, and that means we immediately go to minus infinity there. While the upper bound is still 2, so therefore we can keep it. Okay? And so if here in that particular case down here, this is just any an arbitrary other example, the lower bound is still okay, it's still 1, and the upper bound would have to move from 5 to 7, and so we go to plus infinity. Okay? So, as a conclusion, we find that widening returns larger values more quickly than if we use ordinary round robin iteration, or as if we use in these places just the least upper bound. It is not commutative, as we have seen here. It is not commutative, and it should be constructed in such a way that the number of updates for each program point is bounded by something, so that termination of round robin iteration is guaranteed. And for interval analysis, well, for each variable, an interval may increase at most twice. So therefore, the number of updates is kind of bounded by the number of program points times something which depends only on the number of variables. That is kind of now our method. We come up with widening operators, then we plug it into our system, and that particular spots to where we first. So we first changed our constraint system into an equation system with accumulation, and then we replaced the least upper bound as an accumulation operator by the widening. And that then we kind of, if the widening was chosen well, then everything will terminate, and we come up perhaps not with the least solution, because we kind of increased values more than necessary, but at least with some solution. And some solution is good enough, because any solution provides us with correct information, and then therefore the intervals might be too large or very large, but still they are intervals containing all the values from the which may occur at runtime, so therefore these are good intervals. So now, in order to make this work for intervals, I gave you a candidate implementation of this operator widening. In general, constructing good widenings is not completely trivial. Why? Because you throw away information. And if you do it in a bad way, then you throw away information exactly. You throw away exactly that information which you were interested in. And then the algorithm terminates but doesn't provide you with useful information. So here that a value, as soon as a value increases, we throw the upper bound away. And the intuition between that is if you have a loop and a value increases, then the typical situation is that it's a loop index and that it may increase more and more and more. And so, therefore, it might go to infinity. So, therefore, that is the intuition for that kind of widening. Now, let's see what happens in our little, super-duper little example. whether widening will solve the problem. Okay? So this is the first iteration I have shown, which I have tried to indicate for the without widening. So what happens in the first iteration at broken point one, we have the value from the least upper bound from here, and from there at broken point seven we have it is still bottom, so therefore we obtain for one the value provided by the constant assignment I equals zero. So therefore there the at L and U at broken point one are 0, 0. That value is then preserved until propagated broken point five. And then at broken point six there's an increase in the I, so therefore now we have the interval 1, 1. So now comes the next iteration. So in the next iteration, we find here 0, at broken point 0, we have top. So minus infinity, plus infinity, nothing has changed. Now proceeding to broken point 1. So the old value is this one. What is the new value? What is the new contribution? The new contribution is provided by the interval 0, 0, least upper bound 1, 1. Because these are the value from here and the value from there. So from these edges. Along these two edges I have to take the least upper bound. This is the right hand side for the broken point one. And this interval must be compared with the old interval for broken point one. And that is this one. Sorry, this one. Now you see this interval on the right. I kind of simplify to it by rewriting here. Is that? Yeah. And now if I do the so you see the lower bound stays the same, but the upper bound goes from 0 to 1. Now the upper bound increases, so this means immediately we get the value 0, infinity. And this is what I have written down there. Ah, sorry. What I have written down there. This value is propagated down here to broken point 5. At broken point 6 we increase by 1. So this gives us 1 plus infinity. And then we proceed to broken point 7. Now broken point 7 is obtained by... The broken point 7 was unreachable before. Now we have at broken point 2 the interval 1 plus infinity. And we want to check, is it possible that... does this interval intersect with the interval minus infinity to minus 1 or the interval 42 to infinity? And the answer is yes, it intersects, and therefore broken point 7 may be reachable, and we obtain that at that point the value would be 42 infinity. And at broken point 8 we obtain, okay, at broken point 1 we have 0 infinity. If the value then is not less than 42, then it is 42 to infinity. Ah, so it's... So this means we have somehow the analysis terminates. The next round would not change the values anymore. Would not change the values anymore, but so the positive information, the good news is the analysis terminates. The bad news is it is worthless. We failed to prove that broken point 7 is not reachable. So what can we do? So obviously the result is very disappointing, at least to me. One thing which, going back here, so now we have to improve it. So this acceleration is nice because everything terminates, but we accelerate it too much. So we have to throw away less information. How can we do that in a systematic way? So one observation is that this acceleration, so we applied it in every program point all the time. We could improve on that by just saying, well, acceleration is only necessary at one point in a loop. Because if at that point you have only finitely many increases, then the other points, they kind of follow. Then they also can only be increased finitely often. So that means it suffices to pre-select nice places where to apply the widening, and then do the widening only there. So what we need is kind of a set I, which contains at least one element from every loop. So here we have only one loop, so we need one node. But in general, you have many loops, and then you need one for every loop. And then we would apply widening only at that places, and at all other places we do the precise computation. Then round-robin iteration still would terminate, and now the question is, what does it mean? What kind of points could we use? So in a loop, so it should be kind of dedicated places, so what could we use? So I have here three suggestions. Either it is the loop head, which is a natural choice, or we take the case where we have this exit to the bad state, like here this broken point 2, or we could take any other point like the 3, for example. We could use also the 6, which might be perhaps a nice place. But why shouldn't... So it's not always, but... So let's see what happens if we place with strict widening just to the place to program point 1. So here the first iteration would not change because the first iteration of our round robin algorithm would do the same thing as before. Now the only point is now what happens at the next iteration. So in the next iteration, at program point 0, nothing changes. Now program point 1. So that was a widening point. So that means there we always have to do a widening. So the old value, as we have seen, is the value 0,0, and the new value is the 0,1. We apply widening and get, I mark it in black, 0,infinity. But that's the only place where we apply widening. Then we kind of use this value to determine the value at program point 2. What would be the value at program point 2? Well, we have no upper bound for I at program point 1. But when we go to proceed to program point 2, we recover an upper bound for the I, namely due to the guard. The guard says I should be less than 42. So this means that the value of I can be improved by intersecting with the interval minus infinity to 41. And therefore now we get the nice result that at program point 2, I should be in the range of 0 to 41. And with this value, we may now proceed to program point 3. And there we do the intersection again with the guard. Okay, but this interval is just the guard, so there is nothing to be gained. But that at least this interval is kind of survives until program point 6. And there we increase by 1. So increasing this interval by 1 gives the interval 1 to 42. And now this interval must be taking the least upper bound with the interval which we have at 1 for the next iteration. But there, nothing will change. So that therefore this value provided here in the second iteration will always already be the final result. Now let's see what happens with program point 7. with program point 7, we have to now take the value which we have for program point 2 and check whether this interval contains element outside of the interval from 0 to 41. Well, and it doesn't. Therefore, and now we have it, 7 is indeed not reachable. So this is now very good news. We are very happy about that because it was only a simple trick which we applied, and the still we could benefit from the acceleration due to widening, and now we were able to recover that the bad situation cannot happen. There is still, that is on the one side, but there is still some bad news, because what do we get for program point 8? Well, for program point 8 we have to take the intersection of the value at program point 1, which is 0 infinity, and have to intersect it with the negative of I less than 42, and that is we have to intersect it with 42 infinity, and that gives us the interval 42 infinity. So that means we succeeded in proving that the bad state is not, that the bad broken point 7 is not reachable, but we still had a loss of precision in that sense that at broken point 8 we lost the upper bound. Okay? Now, okay, so we were quite happy with that, and or at least I would be quite happy with that, with this separator set consisting just of the loop head. Now let's see what happens if we kind of move some that point I somewhere else. So for example, we move it here. That would mean in the second iteration that at program point 1 we really take the least upper bound of the value provided from the through the control, the old value which was 0,0 and the new value which is 0,1. So therefore we get the precise value at program point 1. Now at program point 2 we do the widening, so therefore we lose the upper bound, but that upper bound is then recovered by the guard from 2 to 3. This is preserved until program point 5. This interval is incremented by 1 by going from 5 to 6. And then we proceed to for program point 7. What is program point 7? We obtain that the program point... Well, what is program point 7? So therefore we have to take the value at program point 2 and have to check whether it has... what is the intersection of that with the complement of the interval 0, 41. And so, well, the complement of 0, 41 contains the all values 42 to infinity. So therefore now we obtain that one for program point 7. So program point 7 is, we cannot exclude that program point 7 is reachable. For program point 8, we so far have that it is not reachable, so therefore we still have bottom there. Now in the next iteration, what happens in the next iteration? In the next iteration, this value, which was not yet large enough, will be increased to 0,42, because it will be increased to the least upper bound of that value and the value 0,0, and that gives 0,42 for program point 1 and the variable I. The other values would not change, up to would not, all these values would not change, but the value, since the value at broken point 1 has changed, then also the value of at broken point 8 changes. Why? At broken point 8, you take the value at broken point 1 and intersect it with 42 infinity. So we now have to intersect 0, 42 with 42 infinity, and this gives us precisely 42, 42. That is, we are happy to announce that the value at broken point 8 is the precise value. No information loss here. So I make it perhaps in that way. So we are, this is a happy news, and this is extremely sad news. So for broken point 7 we are very bad, but for broken point 8 we are very good. And if you compare it with the situation which we had here, there it was the opposite way round. We were bad. The value for 8 was bad, and the value for 7 was good. So now we see. So what do we learn from that? Okay, so this is an accidental. Yeah, but what we learn is that placing the widening operator at different places has different effects. So it's not so completely clear what is the best place to place a widening. So the loop head is typically considered a good place, but you never know. And here in this case, one might lose information for the loop exit. And one might. So it. Yes. So one might lose precision for the loop exit. So that makes. So both runs have their. Have their pros and their cons. So, and but therefore, since both are return incomparable results, this leaves us with the question: we, as designers and implementers of such analysis, what can we do? And the one other thing which makes the situation a little bit annoying is that we have to do. Yeah, we have to look at the control flow graph, we have to search for loops and such things, and that might be is extra work. The question is, can we do it in a systematic way? Can we go without doing such kind of graph manipulation? And the answer is yes. There is another idea, and this is the idea. It is again a simple idea, but an extremely useful idea. And this is the idea of introducing narrowing. So what is narrowing? So the first point, the first observation which one might make is that after widening with loop separator and or without, so with localized, with localizing the application of the widening operator to some places or without that, in both cases the result will be some solution of the constraint system, but not necessarily the least one. And typically it's a useless one, it's a too large one. So that what one would like to have is to have a post-processing which perhaps may regain some of the precision which has been lost. And this is the idea of narrowing. So for that, we assume that we have already a solution, any solution, of such a constraint system. And now also we assume that these right-hand sides, and this is now important, are monotonic. Now if the x is larger than f of x, then if you apply f of x, you get something smaller. Yeah, you should read that. You should read that as the promise. If you apply f to x, then you get something smaller, and that means something better. So why not, after having something which has widening produced, why not take that value and then plug it into your system, apply round robin a few more times, and see whether it improves the values? Yeah. So this is the narrowing iteration. It's a post-processing by taking a solution, any solution, and plug it into the round robin iteration again for a few times. And then each of the values which one obtains is still a solution, but it may be a smaller solution, and so a better solution. And that means that this narrowing of iteration is it is not malicious, it's benevolent in that sense. So you can stop at any time. When you may iterate and values may improve, and if you have, you may wonder, should this iteration terminate or not? The answer is, we don't care, because if we don't want to iterate anymore, we simply stop. We have something which is a little bit better, as much better as we could afford with our limited computation time. This is different from this iteration which we did for solving these constraint systems in the first go. If we stop there, then we are below the least solution. And then think of available expressions, then we assume that more expressions are available than really are available, or more variables are alive than really are alive. More variables are dead than really are dead. And so that is bad. So therefore we could not stop at any time. We had to iterate until stabilization, and before that we had no reasonable information. But here, in this post-processing phase, we may stop at any time and always will have a correct solution. And that makes it a very convenient thing. So now, let us see whether that helps us. This simple idea, so it's again, you see, very simple ideas, but can have dramatic effect. So here is... I have written down here just plain the result provided by plain widening. So you saw there is not much which we obtained, only a few lower bounds here and nothing else. And the upper bounds, we lost them. Now what happens if I take that and now apply round robin iteration again, but this time no widening. So that's crucial. We just apply the constraint system. So now let's see. So here is what we get. What is for broken point one? In the next iteration for broken point one, we take the contribution from here, which is the interval 0, 0, together with the information from here, which is the information 1, infinity, and this gives us 0, infinity, and this is the new value for broken point one. So you will see there nothing has changed. So for broken point one we did not improve. So bad luck, perhaps. But now what happens if we proceed from program point 1 to program point 2? So here, program point 1 to program point 2. So there we traverse the guard. But the guard improves the upper bound from infinity to 40 to 41. So therefore we now have a decent interval, which is much better than the interval which we had before. And we propagate that interval until program point 5. And broken point 6 then increases this interval by 1, so also there now we have a nice upper bound, namely 42. Now what happens to broken point 7? So broken point 7 is reached from broken point 2, and there we have an interval which excludes that that 7 is reached, so therefore we nicely have that there's bottom. Hooray! So that's fine, great. We have shown that 7 is not reachable. So with this simple trick, so you must really say it's a simple trick, nothing very fancy. And now vote for program point 8. okay, for program point 8 we make no progress yet, since program point 1 has not yet changed. But now we can do another iteration, and in the next iteration for program point 1, the new value is obtained by taking the new value of 6 at program point 6, which is this one, and take the least upper bound from the value which arrives along the control flow edge from 0. So that means the new value is, the new value for program point 1 is the interval 0,0, least upper bound 1,42, and that is the interval 0,42, which is great, because that is exactly the best thing we can hope for. And now the nothing changes here anymore, but for program point 8 we also get a new value. Because we have a better value for 1, we therefore also get now a better value for 8. We have to intersect the interval 0,42 with the interval 42 infinity, giving us the precise interval 42,42. So just two further iterations of round-robin iterations simply produces the best solution. And that's the least solution in this case. We will not always reach the least solution, but at least we kind of here in this particular case, and in many other cases we will succeed in the same way. Okay? So it is surprising somehow how successful simple tricks can be. Is there a question? Yeah. So we start out with a safe approximation to the solutions. This means some solution to the constraint system. And we applied several times round robin iteration. In this case, it terminates. Actually, for interval analysis over the integers, I have not seen any example where it would not terminate. So if you come up with, could show me a little example where it will not, this narrowing iteration may not terminate, I would be very happy. So we could do the same thing if one had analyzed floating points or rational numbers, and then one could construct infinite decreasing chains. But for intervals, it's for me completely unclear whether one could construct an example where it would not terminate for interval analysis. Okay, so in this particular case, at least we find that all our expectations for such an analysis can be met, namely that the inner check is redundant and that at loop exit we always have the value 42. And the extra benefit is no extra pre-processing was necessary to obtain these loop separators or things like that. Okay, so then perhaps just to complete that picture, in general, so here we have intervals, that is in some sense also only one example where one can apply this widening and narrowing technique. One might wonder, in general, this narrowing iteration may perhaps not terminate. Can we also perhaps accelerate the narrowing? And yes, one can. One can accelerate the narrowing iteration by means of a narrowing operator. So how do we do it? So we proceed in the same way. If we are in the second phase, in the second phase, the x is larger than the right hand side. So therefore we now do this accumulating iteration, but now with an intersection. So now it is forced to be a decreasing iteration. And then we replace this this fancy operator here, which is the greatest lower bound operation. We replace that by a novel operator. This is this narrowing here, which I wrote in that way to let it resemble to the intersection. And now, so it should approximate the intersection, but it should not decrease faster than the intersection, because that would mean that we might become unsound, that the result might not be correct anymore. But it should kind of decrease values reluctantly. So it should, that means we kind of, it should be between the old value, that is the value, the first argument, and the best, if you like, the steepest decrease, which would go to the intersection of A1 and A2. And you choose something in the middle. You choose something in the middle. And now how would that narrowing operator, what would that be for interval analysis? So there, I guess the value with the thing which Patrick Cousot suggested is the following. Well, so here the first, for this bot with this bottom element, you always then return bottom. That's for the one thing. But if you have real if you have values d1 and d2, which are both different from bottom, and you do this, apply this narrowing to these pair of variable assignments, then you do it variable wise, and for each variable apply the following strategy. You only improve infinities. So when you have already a finite bound, you keep it. But when you have lost a bound, you might want to recover it. So this means here, if we have that, the result should be L, U, and then L, the lower bound is the new lower bound L2. If L1 is minus infinity, and otherwise we keep L1. And the new upper bound is the U equals the U2 if the U1 is infinity, so you had no upper bound at hand before, and otherwise you keep the old upper bound. So by that, it is, let us see perhaps an example what that means. Here is my example. If you have one value, say one infinity, and the new value which arrives, it's necessarily smaller. So what you get is a value, say 220. The intersection would be 220, but then what narrowing returns is 120. You only improve the infinity. So clearly, this is a larger value than the precise, 220. Yeah. So you do not improve so much, but by that you kind of more quickly terminate, because that means in every iteration you may improve a value only twice, namely you by recovering two bounds. And that means again that the narrowing iteration may must terminate. Okay. And again we note that this narrowing operator is not commutative, because it's always the left value, the left argument, which is taken as the reference value, which the right argument is going to improve. So now let's see what happens if we apply this accelerated narrowing iteration to our super duper example. And again, we start out with the stupid result returned by widening. And then in the first round we improve here the upper bounds, all these upper bounds, to finite values and no further. And in the second round, we also improve this upper bound and that upper bound. And since we only improve infinities and never improve finite values, it is exactly the core. And that was the only thing what was necessary in this example. We find that narrowing also will recover. Here, in this particular case, the least solution, this accelerated narrowing iteration. And this means, in there we have the additional guarantee that the iteration will not go forever or for a long time, but we can build in the termination argument into the narrowing operator. Yeah. So, now what is kind of the, what would then be the approach? The approach would be we do one iteration of the using a widening operator. We get a post, we get some solution which is bad, and then we improve on it either by plane narrowing or by accelerated narrowing together with such a narrowing operator. That would be the idea. And in this particular case, we found that the narrowing returns already returns the optimal result, and this accelerated narrowing also. This is not need not be in general. So in general, accelerated narrowing might produce less precise results, but still much better results as if you used widening alone. So in case of interval analysis, also this with this accelerated narrowing, we obtained that we can have that the number of iterations is bounded by the number of broken points times essentially twice the number of variables, because for every variable we allow only two improvements. And yes, that is one thing. Perhaps one more hint I may give you, and that is this one, that this widening, this works for any kind of functions, because we simply get more rapidly larger and we will get some solution even if the right-hand sides are not monotonic. In our applications, these right-hand sides always have been monotonic. So in that sense, this extra generality is not used by us. But then there are situations when these transformations are not monotonic, and in that case, still widening can be applied. For narrowing, we kind of exploited that monotonicity. Why? Because if we have a very large solution, then plugging it into the right-hand sides will result in a decreasing sequence, and that allows us to improve. And that only works because they are monotonic. Otherwise, this decrease could not be relied upon. So therefore, narrowing has more assumptions than widening. Yeah, and then clearly, what in practice people do everything what they can, and that means they do widening not everywhere but only at some points, and then they do also narrowing not everywhere, this accelerated narrowing not everywhere but only at these particular points, and otherwise try to compute precisely. And that is the best strategy which you could hope for. Okay, is there any question? So what I have here presented as two separate solutions is something which people simply join. So, and then they simply do the widening and narrowing both at loop heads only, and at all other places they use least upper bound and intersection. Okay, so this finishes our section on interval analysis. Is there any question about it? Yeah. And So perhaps one may remark that this interval analysis, for that you can remove array-bound checks for arrays of static size. So if you have a buffer of 512, and then you could try to prove that accesses are always within this fixed size. But if you have allocated an array of with an unknown upper bound, then you will not be able to remove that, because then you have to compare the index of I with the upper bound N, and you don't know what N is. In that case, these techniques are not precise enough. So what you... Yeah?
Is this information also used for compiler warnings, for example, CLang, or warns about access beyond, or possible access beyond an array of fixed size, if the loopage array, for example, can get greater? This is actually information can be retrieved from this stage, from this optimization stage.
Yes, you could kind of extract such warnings from that. And I guess in that is done. They such kind of this is the kind of base analysis which all these kind of tools use. And but what I wanted to say is, when you want to have, if you have an array of size n and you have a running index I, and then you have such kind of guards, then interval analysis as is would not work, because what one would have to to show that that no matter what n is, that I will always be less than n, and for that you need something like that n minus I, for example, or n minus I, that this is bounded. So you have to compare two variables, or you have to provide an interval for the difference of two variables. So that is, this is kind of an extension of interval analysis, if you kind of track differences of variables. This is and to track differences of variables is more complicated. One can do it in a, that is one of the most straightforward, in a most straightforward way. The problem there is that if you have many variables, then the number of variable differences is quadratic in the number of variables. So if you have 100 variables, then you have suddenly 10,000 differences to track, and that might be extremely expensive. So therefore, then the art consists in kind of clustering variables for which it makes sense to determine the differences. So for example, the I and the N, these are kind of two variables which occur in the same context and in the same expression, in the same test, and therefore it makes sense to track that difference and not all other differences. So therefore the black art there consists in doing a heuristic search over the program which variables should be considered together, and so that one should track the differences between them, and then do just that, and not between all variables. Okay? And then, and this, I guess this tracking of variable differences is another very valuable thing to do, in particular for, and one, if one takes this thing with a buffer overrun serious, you have to do it, because in many cases you don't know the buffer size, for example. Okay, but I guess the time is over. I think we are at we now enter a completely new subject, namely pointer analysis, which is also a which you have to do in any reasonable compiler, because pointers are everywhere, and without that you can't do very much. So, but that we will look at next week. For this week, thank you very much, and have a nice day.